Where have all the boys gone?
Years ago, men dominated college campuses, but today more girls go to college and graduate than boys.
Are girls smarter than boys? This is Bob Boyd.
And Jerry Boyd.
This is Issues in Education. Why do boys have 3 times more learning disabilities than girls?
Why are millions of boys taking drugs for ADD and ADHD?
A boy's natural energy is seen as disruptive. A boy's natural competitiveness is seen as boisterous and aggressive. Public schools used to teach academics, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but now school kids are being used as pawns to change our culture. They confuse kids to not even be sure if they're a boy or a girl or some other gender.
Here's a public school teacher in California talking about how schools are implementing gender identity and sexual orientation.
Hi, my name is Brenda Lebsack. I'm a public school teacher in Santa Ana Unified and also a school board member in Orange Unified. Some of the new curriculum that's out there, the new law that was passed for the California Healthy Youth Act, the curriculum is mandatory for middle school and high school for gender identity and sexual orientation.
There's no standard. Anything goes. Jesus said in Matthew 19 that God created only 2 genders, male and female, not 3, but 2. But public schools want to change that, saying there are many genders depending on how a child feels about it, how he feels inside that day.
Some people say there are only 2 genders, but there are really many genders. Gender identity refers to one's internal, deeply held sense of being male, female, neither of these, both, or other genders, and may not necessarily correspond with an individual's sex assigned at birth. When babies are born, people ask, is it a boy or a girl? Babies can't talk, so grown-ups make a guess by looking at their bodies. There are more than just 2 choices.
More than just 2 choices? This is crazy, and they keep adding more and more. So what do you choose to be today? Talk about confusing children, and parents thought they were sending their children to learn about academics, not choosing their gender or being confused about gender.
It's really a disservice to try to change a child's nature, to try to change boys and girls when God gave them different innate personality traits that can't be changed. God has made men and women differently for a reason. Men don't have babies, for one. They're different.
Our guest is Michael Gurian, who has authored over 26 best-selling books and published in 21 languages.
Michael Gurian is really an expert. He's done extensive scientific research on the difference between boys and girls' brains, so the boys and girls can thrive and not just survive. In his book, Raising Boys by Design, Michael Gurian says that boys and girls learn differently, so they need to be taught differently.
When boys are taught in the same way as girls, they may become agitated and diagnosed with ADD and ADHD.
Michael, what did you find out in your research? What's the bottom line?
There's sort of a huge gap in the way that we train teachers on how males and females learn. There's a sense of we're all human, so we ought to all learn the same way. But by the time they get to 3rd grade, these males will be gradually falling behind because the teachers don't know how to make the lessons work for them.
Social scientists and educators used to think that all learning was socialization, that it was the environment. But now we're finding out there really is some very basic difference even in utero, right?
Oh yeah, while the baby's being carried. This is true, by the way, for all races, on all continents, and in all cultures. We can see the PET scans, and every talk I give, every lecture, I show the PET scans and the SPECT scans that show how different these brains are from all races.
Yeah, I think this is fascinating. It's not just cultural. It's not just Western civilization. It's universal. You've done these actual brain scans that show a difference. I thought it was fascinating on your website how the female brain had a lot more going on at resting stage than the male brain. So this is really hard science. There is a difference.
Oh yeah, it's hard science. That rest state is fascinating for people. There is a genetic difference between the way male and female brains do boredom. Both boys and girls get bored at school, but girls could be completely zoned out, right, because they're totally bored in that classroom, and they can still take notes, they'll still be processing what the teacher's saying, still be doing a worksheet. Their brain is very engaged, even in a boredom state. So then you scan male brains in that exact same boredom state in the same place, and you notice that there's nothing really going on except for survival mechanisms in that brain. So their eyes start to close, they stop taking notes, or they try to stimulate themselves by tapping their pen or by hitting the kid in front of them on the head, you know, in a playful way. or something to stimulate, or they raise their hands and yell something out. The teachers haven't seen these scans, so they don't understand that these guys are trying to keep their brains out of that rest state. Being bored is different for girls and boys. And then when we look at boys getting 70% of the D's and F's, and you talked about the Ritalin and all the issues they're facing now.
Yeah, that is interesting, because when males are bored, their brains literally shuts down. But then bored girls, they still have half of a brain going on, so they're still active. And you can watch your daughter. She may be bored at the dining room table, but she can still talk to you. Whereas a boy, his brain just disappears almost. He slumps down in the chair and he just can't even talk to you.
Well, this has profound implications for education. It begs us to train teachers to do more project-based learning, to do less worksheets that are irrelevant, and do more things that really engage the brain to go deeply in and learn and become inventive. And when we notice that we're losing boys, they're not understanding how to value this more project-driven, not multitasking, but single-task focused brain.
Because women do multitask more, and is that the reason why they're able to connect the dots more?
Yes, it's very interesting. The males, we have our verbal centers only on the left, and we have a preponderance of these spatial centers, like video games. Those are objects moving around in virtual space, or throwing balls at each other a lot, throwing things at each other. And then that also means inventing rockets. Anything that has to do with objects moving through space.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Jerry and Al go shopping, and if I wanted to get some shoes, I go to the men's shoe department, buy the shoes, and I'm ready to go. Whereas Jerry, she'll see a dress, she'll try it on. Look at those shoes. Every time we go through the shoe department, she's got to take a look, maybe even try a few pair on. So there's a basic difference in between men and women. Women tend to maybe smell the flowers a little bit more. Men are more problem solvers and go right to the point.
Yes, and that's a wonderful example. We laugh, and you're right. One of the deep things going on here is that as women are stimulated, as their brains are stimulated by all these sensorial objects, like the shoes and the color of the shoes and then this other kind of shoe, people have made fun of it as, oh, they like to shop. But it's deeper. It's a gathering activity, and it stimulates women sensorially. Now, for guys, our brains are not set the same way. We will tend to go, I'm right over to the shoes, I'm going to find my target, and I'm not feeling all these sensorial hits, the oxytocin, the chemistry, by sensing all of these things. Yeah, pretty profound difference.
And it's funny, too, because with the oxytocin, actually makes you feel good if you get a nice pair of shoes and it's on sale. I mean, you actually get a high from it. I don't know if guys...
Well, especially if you do it with someone else or you tell someone about it, it's a bonding chemical, so you feel bonded. Yeah,
so there is a difference between males and females in that regard, that men are more aggressive, females are more bonding, consensus builders. They like to build rapport, whereas men are more solve the problem, right?
Yeah, men and women both build consensus. We both do what each other does, so we always want to say that, but let's watch how we do it differently. Males will tend to build consensus once they've competed, so they've proven their worth, so that the consensus they want is worthwhile. Also, that they're targeting the problem in the eyes of the other males. You've competed, you've proven yourself. Okay, I get what you're saying. Now let's have consensus. Females will tend to build rapport early. Like, females compete. There are a lot of very competitive females. I raised two daughters and they love to compete at soccer. So it's not that they don't compete. But when they come together to build consensus, they generally do not need to spend as much time competing to bond. Let's remember, the guys are bonding by competing, right? That's how they're bonding. But females, as soon as they meet each other, they're going to say, let's build rapport. Let's sit here and let's talk about this and see where we want to go. So these are profound differences, and they affect workplaces. Then we find that managers are fascinated by how differently males and females do meetings because of this stuff.
Yeah, well, I could see why, because like you said, girls get more friendships. I mean, I've got a lot of really close girlfriends that I just love, and we talk and we express our feelings, whereas men don't do that as much.
Right. On the one hand, the way that males do it gets a lot done, right? I mean, a lot of things get invented. A lot of businesses get built. A lot of football teams win games. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin, though, is you don't form as many relationships as women do. Women use a lot more words to form bonds than men do. And you see people as competitors. Of course, men have friends, but they also know, well, this person could become my competitor. So the downside is, yeah, you don't get as many friends. So there is a downside to this male way of doing things.
Years ago, men dominated college campuses. Now it's women. More girls go to college than men. And traditionally, male occupations like medicine and law are increasingly becoming female. We're getting female judges, senators. Females are taking what used to be traditional male roles, right?
Yeah, this is very interesting. Now it's close to 60% female, 40% male graduating from college, medicine, in law. Females are 50-50, or females are more dominant. So for those of us with daughters, that's a wonderful thing. But this is also dangerous. What's dangerous is that we have this attrition of these guys. We're not figuring out how to keep these guys in college. In other words, how to change the way we even do college and the way we do high school so that these guys don't drift and hate school and drift. We need to deal with that, because if we don't, 20 years from now, is we're going to have around 30% males and 70% females graduating from college. That's bad for a society. We will not have an educated enough pool of males. So that's going to really harm marriages and families. Our girls are not going to have people to marry. They're going to be very educated. They won't have educated males to marry. Divorce rates will continue to increase. In other words, we got to find a balance. And I fear if we don't, we're going to look at our culture and we're going to have 3 million males in prison. Now we have around 2 million. 3 million males in prison. Because if they're not going to college, some of them are going to go to prison. So this is a very deep thing you're referring to.
Yeah, that's a good point. But there is something that we can do about it, isn't there?
It's the lack of understanding of males. That's the part that's dangerous. And to illustrate it, I love to tell the story about giving little girls and little boys dolls and trucks.
Oh, yeah.
And see what the boys do with these dolls, are the easiest example. Giving little 2-3-year-old girls trucks, they see it as a human being, and they almost in every case nurture it, rock it, and talk to it, right? Both sides of the female brain, very verbal, connected to feelings, they talk to it. But males take the head off the doll, take the arms off the doll, throw the doll up and down, careen the doll around on the ground, because they see it as a spatial object. They don't see it as living, and of course it's not, it's plastic. They see it as a spatial object.
The boys use the dolls as projectiles to be thrown or catapulted into enemy forts.
While the little girls use the toy trucks as dolls, and they covered them up with the blankets and put them next to them, cuddling the little toy trucks and treating them like babies. So trying to change the nature of boys and girls is futile. They are hardwired differently.
We would love every teacher to then see how that develops, because it's more than just dolls, so that then they create lessons that motivate guys where the guys are, making sure that they're not just sitting doing worksheets. It'll be making sure they're taking things apart, putting them together, throwing them up and down, moving their own bodies around. As they're taking a test even, let them move. That's the kind of thing that gives him a better education.
But yet, isn't this sad, because young boys are put on Ritalin, I believe, 3 times more than girls. But I mean, they're being normal, and yet they're medicated. In fact, you were medicated with Ritalin, weren't you, at 10?
I was on Ritalin for 6 months at 10, so I had the hyperactive, and I was. I mean, you can tell from how fast I talk. I was quite the hyperactive kid, and drove the teachers crazy. They didn't know what to do with me, drove my parents crazy. So I was put on Ritalin. Okay, the Ritalin turned me into a zombie. That's what my teacher said. So after 6 months, the teacher actually asked my parents to take me off it. But a lot of these guys now, they don't need it. They're not getting the help they actually need, but they and the school are not actually learning what they need to succeed in life. So it creates an illusion for these guys, and it creates an illusion for the school that they're solving their problem. I've done a lot of research in this area, so we also have more overuse of the drugs to take care of these problems. And so a lot of kids don't have these things, and we're medicating them as if they do. The whole system doesn't get these guys. So everyone comes together and says, maybe Ritalin will work, but look at the system. So the pediatrician's not qualified. We need neuropsych batteries, and the teachers are groping. They're just trying to help this kid. So it's really the system that has to change, whereby everyone understands who boys are and what their design is, and we bring them up through a system that understands them. So when they hit adversity, we don't jump to this thing. And so we are taking the shortcut in the U.S. I mean, there's no doubt. We have such a troubled educational system, we're taking the shortcut.
What we're seeing, that a lot of times boys are misdiagnosed, they're put on drugs, and maybe they shouldn't be, because a boy has a natural energy that could be seen as disruptive. He may be inquisitive, and that could be seen as disrespect for authority, too aggressive or boisterous. So a boy's natural tendencies could be seen as very suspect and something to be corrected, as if he is flawed because he's just a boy. So we may be doing some damage to these boys that we're not aware of until years later.
Right. Yeah, you've hit on a key point. We'll see when they're 23, 25, 27, a lot of these guys, they're unmotivated, sitting at home playing video games. They're not working. They're not really doing much. And we wonder why. Well, one of the things that has happened is they veered off of school by the time they were 12 or 13. It was irrelevant to them. They hated it. They were told they were defective. They were put in special ed or they just got C's and D's. A lot of this started earlier and we didn't know how to deal with it earlier. And now we have unsuccessful, unmotivated young guys. And I think we're going to see more and more of them until we deal with this. What it would be is getting teachers trained to understand what stimulates, what motivates these guys. And they will discover that a lot of these young boys get motivated because they can put their hands on something, take it apart, put it back together again.
So a mom will say, boy, when my kid was 7, he wanted to please me all the time. Now he's 14. He barely wants to talk to me. It's like there's a block.
Yeah. When they look at this worksheet, trying to learn, how is this relevant? What can I do with this? What can I build with this? And they're not going to do it. So then they're going to lie to their mom or dad and say, yeah, oh yeah, I handed in my homework. I did the worksheet. The teacher's going to later call and say, where are these worksheets? It's a vicious cycle. So what I'm calling on teachers to do, as you know, is don't do these worksheets anymore. Do things that are relevant and that both males and females can get behind and learn from.
What you're saying is so important because if a boy does not get encouraging words of celebration or admiration, damage can be done to his confidence. So he can develop this fear of failure, fear of inadequacy. That can become an insurmountable wall on the road to manhood.
Right. Boys feeling like failures because they couldn't see the worth of this. They didn't know why they're doing this. They're just sitting there not learning anything. They don't hand these worksheets in. So what they're getting is you got a D because you didn't do your homework, didn't get the positive reinforcement, right? So the fault is partly theirs that they didn't do the work they should do. But the fault is partly the system, which gave them tasks that gave them no glory, no reward, nothing in there to get them the positive strokes. So then now they're like 12, 13 years old. This has been going on for years. They're checking out. They were not getting the positives that they needed to get. Some people say it's the kid's fault. Every boy should do every one of these worksheets. And if they're not going to do it, that's their problem. And so what if the girls succeed and the boys fail? The boys should adapt. That's one view. And the other view is the teachers and the system should be just as alert to the needs of boys as girls and should see what boys are asking for. And so the system should change to give more relevant work, more purposeful work, more work that's immediately success targeted. And so that's the war. So everyone now has to decide, where do you sit? You're going to blame the boys or are we going to say to the system, let's change? And obviously I would prefer no one is blamed. I would like the system to change.
Yeah, God has placed within every boy a desire for greatness. And so you want them to achieve, but they've got to be interested in it. It would be like somebody giving me a book on logarithms. And I mean, please, you know, I'm just not interested in that. Can't do it. You see, it's like there's a block. So they need to be challenged and encouraged. Projects, things that would stimulate them to succeed.
Yeah, they want to test this out. Maybe it's a teacher listening. In the classroom, show a video clip where you were going to talk. Show a video clip from a movie. That's a visual learning, very stimulating and very motivating. Two, let the boys draw before they write. And by the way, girls can do this too. Anyone could do this. But those four or five boys, they really need to be more graphic. They need the right side of their brain engaged. So if we're giving them a worksheet that's just a list of words, give them a writing assignment that they can draw first, draw a storyboard, draw, and then have them do their writing. So one, video clip. Two, more drawing. And then three, get them involved in some form of competition to achieve their task. Not unhealthy, not negative competition, just basic competition that leads to cooperation and problem solving. So do those three things tomorrow and then do them 5 days a week for a whole month. Systemic change happens.
Wow,
I think also,
neat.
Yeah, those are good suggestions. I think a parent needs to determine if their school has this systemic boy problem. Most teachers haven't been trained in how boys learn and develop differently than girls, and they can make profound mistakes without realizing it. But a parent can really figure out what their boy's interest is and become their homeschool teacher, right?
Yeah, the homeschool movement is growing because we're sensing there are systemic problems. So people are doing these other things, and many of these other things can work.
Well, I wanted to know about your chapter, Building a Hero, because I think boys want to be the saver of the world. They want to be the rescuer of the needy. I mean, look at our firefighters and all our first responders. And so how do you build a hero?
So everyone needs to define what we mean hero, which is honor, enterprise, responsibility, originality. So H for honor, E for enterprise, R for responsibility, and then O for originality. This is based on looking at hero development around the world. So all races, all cultures, trying to figure out what are the threads that are shared. Those are the threads that we found are shared. So under honor comes compassion development and character development, which of course every school can do. Under enterprise comes important work. So enterprise is important work, not just those worksheets, but work that changes the world, work that is of profound service, work that invents things or will lead to inventing. In other words, work that is ultimately going to lead to some success for the individual and connect the individual to the society. So it's not just individualistic. This boy, he can't be a hero unless he is connected to the society. So that's enterprise. R is responsibility. So that's chores, carrying the loads that people in family, friends, communities need him to carry. Responsibility, and then O is originality. This is the exploration, that part of these guys where they're trying to figure out what their unique thing is, their unique talent sets are, and what their unique direction or destiny is. So that's originality. We do those four things, we build a hero.
Boy, that's so good. Parents should really figure out how to develop their child's original thoughts. His gifts are unique to him. They need to encourage those original thoughts so that he doesn't compare himself with others. He needs to be himself. And I think that's such a vital concept, to develop his own personality and not just become like everybody else.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is part of being a hero. Every hero is sort of universal, but also is particular. So every hero fights the dragon, etc. And in that person's unique way, that King Arthur way, or that Joseph being put down in the prison and then becoming the grand vizier, basically, to the Pharaoh, or Jesus, or Moses. Heroes, unique ways. And so that originality is crucial, and that's something we don't want to crush. In other words, we want to help this guy figure out what his originality is. One thing I love to ask parents to do is, by the time he's hit puberty, and you can tell he's hit puberty, 12, 13, 14, be looking at his four or five major talents. What are they? Four or five things we think he's really good at. He's really good at talking to people about their feelings, let's say. It could be that. He's very empathic. Or he's really good at football. What are the three or four he's really good at? And really help him focus on those, not do the shotgun approach, which is let's try to get him to be good at 20 things. Because by the time he's middle adolescent, we can see some of that talent set, and I'd love to see us focus on that talent set and on that personality.
Yeah, I agree, Michael. You're really good at talking. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's a little too good. Sorry, I go on a
great.
Bit.
No, that's good. But in order to help a parent develop their child into a hero, you said responsibility. And I was thinking about this father. He said, oh, come on, son, you can't carry the watermelon from the store. And the mother says, let him try. And this young, lanky adolescent, he picks the watermelon up, and sure enough, he drops it. And the father is shocked, and he says, look, I told you the kid couldn't carry the watermelon. And the mother tries in a nurturing way to say, well, he made a mistake once, let's let him try it again. So in a case like this, you don't want to give the child too much responsibility or they will fail, but yet you need to give them responsibility.
Yeah, give them a couple chances to fail. People can't develop character. Obviously, these kids can't grow up unless they get responsibility and they have the option of failure. Because if we protect them from failing, then we don't give them any responsibility. But at the same time, we got to try to give the responsibility when it's appropriate. I'd like to give an example when kids are like 2 years old. If he's sitting there, this little guy in his high chair, and he drops his spoon, our instinct as parents is to bend down and pick up the spoon for this kid. It's just sort of bred into us that we want our kids to have a really happy life, and we don't want them to suffer, we don't want them to work too hard, etc. And so I think a lot of us like have to stop our arm from going down to pick up the spoon. And I beg parents to tell the kid, okay, you dropped your spoon, get out of your high chair, get down, pick up your spoon. Okay, get back up in your high chair, put your spoon right there. I would rather that we started teaching these kids responsibility very, very early. And then by the time they're 12 or 13 and we come to the watermelon, we will fully trust this kid when this kid says, I want to carry that watermelon, because we trust that he has a sense of responsibility and independence. And then if he fails, okay, fine, he has to clean it up. And 2 months later, he carries it again. So I'd even love to see this start earlier.
Right. And failure is a good thing because it does build character. And think of Thomas Edison. He said, I've not failed, but I found 1,000 ways that don't work. There.
Right. Yes. I love that quote.
love that.
Michael Gurian, co-author of Raising Boys by Design. Maybe you could give us a conclusion.
There is more than enough scientific research and biblical that shows that there is a nature to these guys. There is a design to these boys. My hope is that this book gives them a lot of practical stuff to take away so that they can change the culture. Because I really believe we need to change this culture.
All right, Michael, you're a blessing. Thank
yes,
you so much. God bless you, brother.
Thank you. Bless you.
Michael Gurian wrote that we used to think boys and girls learned the same. Now we know boys and girls learn differently.
Because schools try to educate boys in the same way as girls, more boys drop out, fail, or are put on mind-altering drugs to correct their basic boy nature.
Because teachers have not been trained on how boys and girls learn differently and develop differently, they may make profound mistakes. Instead of a drug, a boy may need a different school or a different teacher, especially when you consider the success that homeschoolers are having training boys to become men, to fully achieve their God-given potential and not quench their desire to learn and excel.
Because it's easier to build well-educated and godly, intelligent men than repair broken men and broken marriages.
Boy, that's so well said. It's easier to build educated, godly, intelligent men than to repair broken men and broken marriages. We pray for godly leaders, and God gives us little boys and girls. What we do with them determines our future as a nation. As the Bible in Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it."
If you would like a CD copy of today's program, please ask for number 1939, Learning Styles, How Boys Learn. That's number 1939, Learning Styles, How Boys Learn. You can order a CD copy of this program or download a podcast from our website. Our website is issuesineducation.org. That's issuesineducation.org. Please give us a call at 928-776-0000. That's 928-776-0000. From Matthew 19, verse 4, Jesus said, "Haven't you read that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female?" For Issues in Education, this has been Bob and Jerry Boyd.